This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
We didn't discuss who's doing an intro, did we?
Listen, you sons of bitches, it's Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, all the rest of y'all. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with the great Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives and the equally, if not sexier Mareko Momasi and Momasi Fire Arts. We are a podcast that does knife-related adjacent podcast information for you.
Dick jokes.
Every week. Yeah. Dick jokes, all sorts of stuff, whatever you want. Guys, we haven't been together in a while. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. So I'll go first then with,
go ahead.
With my weekly health update.
I was going to say, how's your hips doing?
Not too good. So I didn't. I was meant to have an injection this week, but I got it all wrong. So basically, I went to the doctors just so we could see our MRI scan for him then to tell me to come back next week with the injection. I don't know why he didn't do it at the same time. But yeah, Mareko, so I'm having basically an injection in the like a root nerve thing, you know, and it's meant to be good. I've been a bit better this week, but by midday each day, I'm done. I'm absolutely can't move. But I'm waking up and I've got a bit of a spring in my step, but a bit of a shuffle going on, so that it's not too bad. And I'm just generally feeling a lot more positive about things. So yeah, it's all good. Yeah. All good.
That's good.
But I do have driving doesn't irritate me at all. In fact, I quite enjoy driving still because it gets me out and it really doesn't hurt at all.
That's what my grandfather used to say.
Oh, well, thanks for that. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Driving doesn't bother me at all. I love it. Go ahead.
But, you know, walking, obviously, I'm in pain. But driving, yeah. I'm not in any pain at all.
Same thing, Grandpa. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But I've just signed up. I've wrote myself into a 20-hour drive at some point this week. Ooh, 10 hours there, 10 hours back. So we'll see how it holds up then.
You love that.
I do enjoy them, I'll be honest. And this isn't going back to France. This is going to Inverness, which is like the very top of Scotland, like the Highlands, like the wilds of Scotland.
From Outlander.
I've never been that north before in Scotland, so I'm looking forward to that and going to pick something up. So, yeah, 20-hour round trip, which will be crazy. But hey.
Careful of those standing stones up there. I hear they're pretty dangerous.
Yes, yeah. And then
what's stags. That?
Yeah.
What's that?
There's a show called, or it started out as a book by Diana Gabaldon called Outlander. It's a romance novel, histio romance novel series. It's actually pretty good. And then Starz made a series out of it. There's a lot of fucking and there's a lot of history.
There you go. What more can you ask for?
Targeted for all the nerds out there.
You said enough. You said it all. Perhaps you said too much.
Sorry, I forgot to say earmuffs, kids.
Yeah. There's no Santa Claus, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, don't do that again.
While we're at it.
Jeez. Yeah. Actually, whilst we're at it, it is Christmas, isn't it? The whole world is just, it's just flipped on. Christmas is here. And I'm all for it. So I'm very happy about that. But yeah, that's my week. And my week to come. Nothing much to report.
And the new place is working out great. You had your kids had a birthday party. Everyone showed up with paintbrushes.
Everyone showed up. Everyone moved stuff. Wow. I was just ordering people around. Yeah. We had stuff. Yeah. All good.
I can see you pointing people. Pointing with a cane. That there. That over there.
Yeah. Hey, Mareko, do you think you could come a little closer to the mic?
Yeah. How's that?
There we go.
A little closer.
I can't get any closer without making out with the computer.
Go ahead.
That's fine. It sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. But no, it's good. Everybody sort of moves stuff around, and it just completely feels like home immediately here, which is really nice. So we're all good. We're all good. Kids start school on Monday in a new school. We've got the school visit tomorrow to go and check that out. But yeah, they're excited. It's all good. All good.
That's got to feel good to be back somewhere where it really feels like home.
It does. It does. Yeah. And like everything is familiar. Like doing like we forgot how like doing stuff is easy because in French, they're French and, you know, they purposely make things quite difficult. but life is just so much easier here. And it's been great. So Amy's been away for a few days as well. So obviously the kids haven't started school till Monday. So we've been off, and we've just, it's been like a bit of a holiday for us, really, you know. The kids are off. We're getting up late. Yeah, they're just off into the gardens and stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it's just really nice. So yeah, it feels homely already.
Yeah.
There's an update to the safe, Jeff.
Oh, so if you listen to last week's episode, you will know that Craig has this incredible, he found this incredible safe, and the safe was the picture of the thumbnail of the episode last week, and it's incredible. What's the update?
We opened the safe.
Oh, shit.
And?
We opened the safe. We released the spirits. The spirits are all through the house now. Basically, it goes down. I mean, it's just like a cylinder in the floor. And I assumed it would just be cylindrical all the way down, but it doesn't. It opens up and it's sort of round with a flat bottom. Opened it up, full of water. And I was like, ah, lovely, lovely.
Shit.
Yeah, but yeah, just dirty shit water, yeah.
And that's it?
That's it. So we pumped it out with a little filter to make sure we're not picking anything up. And it was empty, completely empty. And I'm gutted because it was one of those things. In half of me didn't want to open it because in my mind it was full of valuable rare treasures, you know, and I knew that the minute we opened it, I knew there'd be nothing in there. I mean, let's face it, what are the chances? And yeah, it just let me down. We opened it, put my hand in, there's nothing in there. So yeah.
Did you tell the 10,000 people on Facebook who were fascinated by
what was going to happen? We did, and yeah, nobody cared. All of a sudden, the messages stopped. Which is what we wanted anyway, I suppose. But that's the safe update. Safe update is it is as boring as we thought it would be.
Yeah, it's just like when Geraldo Rivera opened up Al Capone's vault. That was the biggest TV event of the 70s and 80s.
Was it really? Yeah.
And they opened it up and there was nothing in there. And it was just like everyone was all fired up and nothing.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Rekha, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I survived Thanksgiving. Yeah, it was good. They kept it simple this year, which is turkey, like, what is it? The standard size of cranberry sauce, like homemade, everything made from scratch. Cranberry sauce, mashed potatoes, like a sausage stuffing, a corn dish, and I know there was other stuff, but it was pretty basic, and it was, but everything was nailed. It was fucking delicious.
Oh, great.
It's my first time carving a turkey this year. And that was interesting. And basically, yeah.
Interesting.
I carved all the meat off the bone in the kitchen and put it on a platter. So I laid it out on the platter as it appears on the bird so that people knew where the meat was kind of coming from. Generally speaking, so I kept the wings intact. I separated the thighs from the leg and boned out the thigh and cut it up so that there was dark meat that for people to grab but it was interesting. It was cool. I just watched a quick video on YouTube and then I went and did it, and about 10 minutes later I was done carving the turkey. I was surprised at how straightforward it was.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good. I used my my buddy Rich Patterson, Patterson Blade Works, he sent me a knife to try out one of his production knives. It's a great piece out of AEBL, and I've been using that for several months now, almost 6 months, I think. And it's a fucking great knife, and I used that knife to break down the turkey. It was awesome.
There you go.
Nice. Do you have many knives from other makers there?
That's actually the only knife I have from other makers.
Wow.
Sorry, I lied. I have one other knife from my friend Gabe Fletcher. It was a piece that he and I worked on. I'm struggling to remember things. No, this is a piece he made shortly after I taught him. I like went up and worked with him and taught him some stuff. He gifted me with a knife. But I just have the two knives. I don't even have one of my own knives really anymore. although I have a record setting four pieces in my studio or my shop right now because people have been sending knives back to get them like spa day'd before the holidays. So I have a bunch of my own work in the shop that I haven't seen in years. One of them is one from like 10 years ago.
Hmm.
It's a cool knife. I don't know. It's interesting to see old work because like that one from 10 years ago is like one of the first S grinds I did. It was before I started doing the Japanese cowboy handle. It was right after I just started doing like the pommel nut, like the brand, I don't know, the engraved pommel nut in the bottom of the handle for the through tank construction. It's that one's got like a bunch of some of the first time I did a bunch of just stuff on a knife in it. So yeah,
experimental. Cool. Yeah, because we've just moved over, I've sort of pared down a lot of the stuff that I had. So we literally got four knives in the kitchen at the moment. So one from Fingal, which is a paring knife.
Fingal's knives are great.
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful knife, and it's one where I sort of sent him the handle materials, and he made a bunch, and he passed one back to me, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
Who else? I've got one of mine. I got a bread knife of mine, and I'm trying to think. Oh, one of Thomas. Yeah, one of Thomas, which I've had for about 7 years, and that's always my go-to. I'm using that knife all the time. But I'm finding with these four knives, it's doing it all. You know, it's Yeah, whereas before we had, you know, racks and racks of knives, always used the same ones, so we just brought those over and left the rest over there.
I got you. I like having a couple beater knives, though, on top of the ones I really enjoy using, having a couple that I'm okay with kind of beating the shit out of if I need to sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It is nice to have a couple beaters, but what about you, Jeff? Do you have any knives from other makers?
I have a ton of knives from a lot of makers, especially the... Like, what you fucking ask me for? You ask me for, you little bastard. You and your fucking flooded vault. I got a lot, and then during the pandemic, I bought a lot of knives from a lot of makers.
Okay.
And I have a lot of knives from a lot of makers. But now I found myself, especially, the past probably 6 years ago, I just decided I'm only going to use my knives. So I really kind of just to kind of make sure that things are where I want them to be. So I'm rotating through a lot of kind of knives that I wasn't really, you know, that didn't make the cut, or I was, you know, experimenting on different grinds and stuff like that, and belt grinds and stuff like that, and trying new things out. So, and then they usually rotate out, and I'll send them to my sister or, you know, family or something like that. So.
Yeah,
I see. So you kind of continue to play with the grind and the geometry or the handle shape.
I use what I'm using and see what I like and see what I don't like. And you know, using it, the more you use it, the more kind of attuned you are to things that about it that you like and you don't. So, and then I'm working on stuff that I'm going to do for next year, and I'm fooling around with that, and it's just kind of like, you know, blah blah blah.
I got you.
So
nice. So how's your week been anyway?
Madness, total madness. Oh. I'm deep in the weeds. It's only me here in the shop, and I am like, I'm comfortable. I've always been comfortable being under pressure Christmas time for my whole life. So father was a small business owner. We'd get killed at Christmas. My sister had a bookstore, small business, get killed at Christmas. I'm totally used to getting killed at Christmas. So I'm getting killed at Christmas, which I'm grateful for. I'll take it. Make the mess. We're making the mess. So that's good. But something very funny happened about 12 minutes, you know, maybe 20 minutes ago. So before we come on to Knife Talk, I'll usually get here 10 minutes early just to make sure my mic's working. I'll, you know, make sure that everything sounds okay. I'll do, you know, I'll just get comfortable, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll think to myself, why don't you just kind of stretch it out a little bit? So I'll go on Instagram Live.
Excuse me?
You stretch it out a little bit.
Give it an old stretcheroo.
I got to stretch
just
it out.
Just shake one out before the show, yeah.
Is that so strange?
Go on.
What's the problem?
You drawing out a billet or?
No, I fucking stretch it out. I got to stretch my shit out, dude. He loves it.
Oh, it's like warm-ups. It's like warm-ups.
That's right. I'm warming up, getting some energy. I want to have energy when I'm on here, so I do Instagram Lives. Just stretch it out.
That's OnlyFans. You do that on OnlyFans. No.
Oh, geez. That's what I'm talking about. So so all of a sudden, I was talking to a few people and trying to get people to do the All Beef review. If you're listening to this, go to Knife Talk Podcast Instagram, and then you'll see me, you know, Thursday afternoon, maybe I'll be doing an Instagram Live, or, you know, we need your beefs. So all of a sudden, I'm talking to these people, and this person wrote, I have very good prices of custom knives and pins. and I have the best prices, really great prices on custom knives.
Was that Donald Trump talking?
No, it was like some,
I have the best prices, on knives, best steel.
Yeah, I love it when you do the best part about you doing the Donald Trump is if I ask you to do more, you're not going to be able to. That's okay. So this dude is obviously one of these guys who are, spamming people with like...
Nobody makes a better knife than me. Sorry.
All of a sudden, I realize this is one of these, these cheap bullshit fake, whatchamacallit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I realize, I'm like, dude, you're in the wrong fucking place. These are all knife... We all have... Great prices on all the people in this fucking feed are watching have great prices. We don't want to buy your bullshit.
And so he's in the chat on the live.
Yeah, on the live, right. Trying to sell us fucking knives. And I was like, you don't even listen to this goddamn podcast. And I just started tearing his ass up. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. And I was like, how dare you? You don't even listen to this podcast. Get your ass out of here. But it was hilarious because it's just like, it was funny. It was really funny, and then all sorts of people started laughing because it was just like, "Yeah, what are you doing?"
Was he responding?
He was responding with like, "LOL" and cry face. And
they must
says,
follow the Instagram page, otherwise they wouldn't have known it went live.
Yeah, right? But that doesn't even matter. I mean, yeah, of course, but that they follow the shit, but it's like it's like, hey, you want to buy some pins? You mosaic pins? I get the best prices on mosaic pins. Yeah, want to see my knife? It's just some bullshit. So it was really funny because I was just like, I needed to like get my energy up, and I fucking lit this dude up in front of 11 people. It was really kind of funny. So yeah, we're getting ready. Cool. Christmas time is upon us, and I'm just taking full advantage of trying to kill it the rest of the year, and hopefully not myself.
When's your cutoff for sort of postage shipping?
Well, what we did was, some things on the website are ready to ship. So if I can get it, I'll get it in the mail. And some things are going to take a couple weeks. So we made it very clear. And then Allison is also doing some. She's holding it back for me, and responding to emails and stuff like that. So. Most people we're still doing our discount, and it's been amazing. We had one week that was like phenomenal, probably our best week we've ever had. Wow. And it was like, it was totally worth it. And we're going to end up in a good spot at the end of the year. And we're just kind of managing the expectations of the customers. I mean, some people just wanted a deal, So a lot of these are not gifts, and we're writing back and saying, if this is a gift for Christmas, let us know. And what my plan is if there are certain people who are just, they're not reading or they're not doing anything and they bought something and then, I'm planning on doing a wad of watercolors and just saying, if this is a gift and we're not going to get it in time, I'll knock out a watercolor for you. And, so we're just doing a lot of, what is it called? We're keeping the water out of the boat, but at the same time we're making it to shore. So everything's good. And then I'm locked in for January. I got something big in January and we're like really excited about February. We're going to be gotten, it's all good. And then after the new year, I'm going to look for some new employee. We need some help in the shop, and I'm going to start. I can't be training somebody now. That's like, it's not worth my time. So coming in the shop every day, came in Saturday, came in Sunday, coming next Saturday and Sunday. And, we'll just keep. Oh, and I got some local Instagram town people are going to come tomorrow, do a little bit of a, holiday thing over here. So.
Oh, that one. Is it the one you met the one you met the other day?
No.
Instagram town people?
No, So Mareko, last week, you didn't listen to the podcast, and now Craig has done what I hate. I'm so radio crazy, I cannot do the inside jokes. I have to set it up. So I went to a party last week. I got a lot of messages. Right.
Yeah.
I went to a party. It was a lot of well-to-do people of Westchester. I go every year, friends with all these big mockers. And there was a woman who was a very, very attractive OnlyFans model who was bringing out booze. And it was like, I was talking to my friend. She comes over to give me some fucking tequila. And I'm like, And so that's what he was referring to. So no, I have not seen.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Her again.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You didn't say the best bit.
Oh, okay. All right. So here's the best
going
bit.
Right. Blah, blah, blah.
So she, so
you turned a little bit gay.
I turned a little bit gay, but I mean, it was out of self-preservation, I think. Wait a second.
You just let her know you're flexible.
Well, no. Just Craig, you didn't. So I was talking to my friend from the restaurant business. We were having this conversation, yeah. And we were having this conversation. She comes over, and I had my arm on my friend's shoulder, you know, his arm. I was grabbing his arm, and this woman comes over, and she's just like extraordinary. I mean, she's extraordinary. It's like an internet woman. This is a fucking internet woman, you know, something you don't see in real life. And then All of a sudden, she noticed that I was like rubbing my friend's arm, and she goes, "Oh, isn't that nice? You're rubbing your friend's arm." And then I was really like, "Well," and then she walked away, and I said, "I don't know what to tell you. I'm really sorry." And he says, "Listen, we were both just trying to cope. We were both just trying to cope.
That's
it was so intense. So, not that so it was you, intense, but
so you
it was
went
like
to some sort of Instagram influencer,
nope.
Like meet and greet out.
No." No. This was like
this is like Westchester rich people.
This is like a people of, you know, power
people
and fame. Power, fame, yes. And you know, there was no Instagram shit going on, but the woman serving the tequila was a Instagram heavy duty with the, you know. Yeah. So it was just like it was a little bit surprising. I'm trying to talk business with these guys, and then there's just like this specimen walks in that you're not expecting.
It's a power move. Some inviting talk business, but invite somebody that's going to be a distraction to the people you're trying to work with.
I mean, it was fun. We had a good time.
You
but
weren't
it was
mad
like,
about
you know, I wasn't prepared. It was the funniest part is I was telling my wife about it. She was laughing because I was just saying, I was like, I'm grabbing my friend's arm. And I'm just like, I had some unconscious, you know, self-preservation and a little gay to be, you know, survival mode. I don't know what the hell happened, but Craig liked that story.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Right. Let's get on with some questions after this.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Get over there. evenheat-kiln.com. So every week we do questions from you, the filthy public. You send us some questions. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. You can type them, or you can send audio questions, and we do our best to try and answer them. We're certainly not experts, but we've been doing this long enough that we sort of
experts.
Sort of know what.
Oh, we are the number one knife-related podcast on this germ-infested planet, whether you like it or not.
So the first one is from Kian Zimmerman. And he says, knife question for all you guys. What is your favorite way to do a hidden tang? I'm a new maker and leaning towards dowel method for my first hidden tang build. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm straight out. I've never done a hidden tang. So, You guys.
I mean, I think the dowel method is a strong place to start. And it's a very solid approach. There's nothing wrong with it. But basically, you take a dowel. Or you'll start by drilling a half inch hole. You'll probably go to the hardware store and get a half inch dowel. So sorry, drilling a half inch hole into your handle material, split the dowel. Then you adjust for the thickness of the tang on that dowel. And then you basically wedge it in with the tang and your glue up. And usually because there's a half inch hole at the top of the block, you usually have some sort of decorative piece of spacer material, ferro material that you will cut a slot in. Ideally something that's wood or synthetic that's easy enough for you to cut a slot in, but so you're not doing like the whole handle that way or anything like that. But it helps save time a little bit on the broaching. If you are going to do a dowel, I would suggest carving little channels in the dowel so that there are places for the wood or for the glue to catch inside that hole. But otherwise, it's a pretty damn good method. And there's a lot of great examples out there on the internet. A lot of makers showing their process. I know JD Mod has shown his process, but there's all kinds of makers out there. I think Noah Vachon has also shown his process for doing the dowel approach, and it's pretty damn good, honestly. And it's very I think it's very quick, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the right size dowel and you have the right size drill bit, that's, and then as long as you're drilling it straight, it's a pretty 1-2-3 situation. I do it often, especially if I'm in a pinch of time.
Yeah.
What I like, my favorite thing to do though, is if I'm doing handles out of G10, I love using that. I guess I don't know if they call it the coffin method, but I can cut out a channel if my tang is the same thickness as a G10, the middle G10, and I cut out a little channel in the middle G10, and then what I like about that, and then all of a sudden it slides right in and it's a perfect fit, and you make some marks on it, and then you glue it up. What I like about it the most is that the knife always is straight in the handle, because it's like a very tight fit and there's no room for like
slop.
There's no slop for it to kind of like, you know, bend to the right like Craig. Or do you bend to the left?
I'm just checking my webcam's on. No, we're good.
you fucking little hockey stick, you.
Okay, yeah, good answers. Who wants to take the next?
This next one is from Cameron Brown. He says, "Hey guys, hope you're doing good. I'm going to build my first kiln soon so I can get into heat treating stainless and tool steels. When researching into what steel to get into, everyone and their dog has different opinions on what to use. Some say certain steel is shit while others go crazy for it. I'm mainly making hunting and chef's knives. And was thinking D2 for hunting and AEBL for chef's knives. Before these, my only experience has been 1084. I would love to hear you guys' thoughts. I also don't really want to bother with cryo. Anyways, love the episodes. They make me make my week.
They don't make me weak.
They make me weak. I got a little gay there myself.
Yeah, you did. Or you got him gay.
First off, I want to say D2 is not a stainless steel, just to be clear. D2 is not a stainless. People mistakenly think D2 is a stainless. It is, unfortunately, is not. It is a high chromium carbon steel, and it benefits from the chromium and developing a lot of carbides, but it is not a stainless steel. ABL, on the other hand, is a great steel, honestly, in general, like all around, for both hunting knives and chef's knives. But what do you guys... And my other thought is, why the fuck are you building yourself a heat-treating kiln that's meant for heat-treating stainless? You got to get it up to such a high temperature. I would be worried you're going to have some problems or cause an electrical fire. I don't know what the fuck.
What would you use?
I would use my Even Heat. I got the LB27 and I'd be using that long doggy for all that stainless. That's for sure. What about you, Jeff?
Craig, what's going on?
I was just trying to look where Cameron is from, see if he's European or where he's in the States or wherever. I can't really see from his Instagram. I'm personally, if I'm doing stainless, I'm using Sandvik stuff all of the time. It's consistent. I know exactly what I'm doing with it. But again, yeah, that the whole making a kiln at the temperatures that you need, it's going to be difficult and probably really expensive too. And I know that, you know, I know Even Heat sponsored the show and we always say everybody using Even Heat, but I mean, seriously, go get yourself an Even Heat. You're probably causing yourself a lot of bother, trying to get something that's going to hold a consistent temperature at such a high temperature as well. I think that's going to be the issue. I wouldn't really bother too much about what steel you're using. The issue is going to be holding that temperature.
I think that I didn't want to deal with cryo when I first started either, and I used 440C stainless, which is easy to heat treat stainless steel, and it's hard as hell, and you're going to curse every time you grind it, every time you hand sand it, because it's so wear resistant without cryo. It's expensive and it's great for outdoor knives, it's great for kitchen knives, but it's a bitch to work with. Yeah. I love AEBL because it's easy to heat treat, It's easy to grind. It's relatively easy to hand sand. It holds a great edge. It's great steel. But it does, the properties that make it good have to, you know, cryo makes a big difference. So I know that people want, you know, everybody wants, you know, the whole thing, but they don't want this and they don't want that. I think that my suggestion would be is to find a stainless steel you like to use and then really get used to that. I was like, I didn't want to be the guy who knows every single steel. I wanted to be someone who really felt comfortable with one steel and just focused on it. And for me, AEBL is just outstanding. Mm-hmm. I will say that cryo makes it better, and I actually have to go and get some more liquid nitrogen probably Monday.
And I'm gonna another story for next week then, okay?
We'll find out. We'll see, because you know, every time I go, it's a roulette of what I pay, which annoys the shit out of me. But at the same time, I got no choice.
Yeah. Another point about cryo, actually. I mean, you say you don't want to bother with cryo. Some steels, and I had a really long conversation with the guys at Sandvik about this, that a sub-zero, as in just a normal commercial freezer, can have massive benefits to certain steels as well.
Yeah.
If you don't want to go all the way to cryo. Don't think you need to, you know, do that whole thing if you're just starting. Just sub-zero is sometimes enough to give big improvements.
I definitely heat treated some AEBL, put it in the freezer overnight, and it definitely clicked up a few Rockwell's points.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I wanted to add, some people are just in a position where they can't afford an even heat, and I don't want to discourage anybody from building your own heat treating oven. Yeah. I'm sure it's definitely possible, and obviously, you know, if these big companies can, so can you. It's going to be a little bit more resource intensive on your end and research intensive for sure. When it comes to the stainlesses, if you're not willing to do the cryogenic or some sort of cold treatment, and our friend Laren Thomas has a great article about sub-zero heat treating or like the cryo treating or cold treatment. And we talked about it actually on a previous episode with him a little bit. Defining those different temperature ranges. But unless you're going to do that as part of the heat treatment process, there really isn't much use in using some of the fancier, kind of more boutique and more expensive stainless steels, because they really do benefit from that. Because at that point, you're heat treating the steel simply for the fact to say, oh, this is whatever, the MagnaCut or something like that, without actually doing a heat treat that optimizes that steel and gets all the benefits out of it. So you're playing off brand rather than actually optimizing the steel to be as high quality and high performing as it possibly can. And I guess that's possibly also another potential downfall of the kiln, like Craig was saying, is having something that's going to get to a temperature and hold it consistently. And that's going to be really important, again, for optimizing the heat treat of any of these stainless steels, especially with these more boutique ones with a lot of different alloying elements and very particular ranges, temperature ranges that you want to work with when you're heating them, as well as when you're doing the cold treatment on them.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Jeff, would you like to do the next one?
I would. This comes from our friend David Duncan, too. I think we met, Mareko, you and I met David at
Double
Blade
D.
Show.
Yeah.
Double, is that his name? Double D? Double D? We're with you, David. What's up, gentlemen? How important is TIG welding when making Mosaic Damascus? Could I get away with just MIG or flux core welding?
I would say TIG welding is not necessary, but I will say if you're going to weld right onto the tiles, you're going to be pushing a lot of fill material. So what you would actually into your expensive material, so your Damascus pattern, you've spent all this time making this Mosaic Damascus material. You don't want to basically waste away any of it. And so if you MIG or flux core weld into it, you're shoving fill into that steel. You have to get in there and grind that out at a certain point. And it's kind of a hairy situation. You would actually probably be better off canning the steel. So using sacrificial material of some sort, whether it's, honestly, mild steel is just fine. But use mild steel, wrap it in that. And then you can MIG weld all the seams around that can on the outside to your heart's content. I would probably do a little bit of cleanup so you're not unnecessarily like deforming the steel within that can. But that way you're not shoving any material in any weld into those tiled mosaic surfaces, trying to get that material to stick. And then you can, at a certain point of amount of time and amount of reduction, you can grind that can off, and then you only have your clean steel. And then from there, you can forge your blade or forge it out into a bar and stock remove whatever you're planning on doing without having to, without wasting away, unnecessarily losing and wasting your precious mosaic Damascus material. It is a little bit more time intensive, but it's like, I have a hard time remembering this. Like, cause I'm just like, I get the steel made, I want to make a knife, and I just want it to be done sooner than later. But the reality is like, oftentimes you spend 2, 3, 4 days, sometimes more, making the steel. And then when it comes to doing this extra steps and like building a can around, like you're trying to save yourself an hour of work. And it's like, you already have 40 hours into this shit. Spend another hour, build a can around it. And then stake another hour somewhere down the way after doing some forging to take the can off, and you're gonna be thankful for it, because shortcutting things, and I've done this hundreds of times, always ends up biting me in the ass and pissing me off and wasting material, and it's just not worth it. Just take the little extra time to do it, and you're gonna be thankful for it.
There we go. Makes sense. Okay, coming up later, we do have some KTP ChatGPT.
Big time.
Big time, so stick with us.
Tune it in, turn it up, and rip off the knob.
We've got another question from Rosendahl Works, or Rusendahl Works. He's been enjoying Marathon Talk and following Jeff's monumental achievement. So well done to him at his age. But I think it would be great now to follow Mareko on his journey to Journeysmith. Specifically, has he done the performance test? If so, what steel did or will he use, and why? Also, if possible, can we know who he would choose to do the performance portion of the testing with? He's very interested in this journey, man.
Man, oh man, I thought you said and. I was like, and?
Yeah,
what kind of steel? Honestly, I'll probably use a straightforward, simple carbon steel. 5160 has a long history of being a very high toughness steel. And it's got plenty of carbon to get a nice hard edge that can do all the chopping and cutting and still hold an edge sharp enough to do the shaving of hair. I don't really know. It's probably just going to be something I have laying around the shop. I have some 1084, 5200, W1, I guess I do have some 5160. So I haven't really dialed that in yet. I'm not really overly concerned about which particular steel I'm going to use, because most of them are going to be plenty capable of doing the test. It's just a matter of doing the heat treat properly to create a tough, martensitic structure within the material. And then regarding who I might ask to do the performance test, I'm not sure. I might try to go down and get, or at some way somehow get a hold of Steve Schwarzer and go do my test with Steve. He's a granddaddy in the craft, and he's, you know, a lot of work that he has done in the past, a lot of us have benefited from, myself particularly, especially regarding forging mosaic Damascus and forge welding processes and techniques. Stuff like that's been trickled down, and I benefit greatly from that. I've also thought about reaching out to Bob Kramer, but there are also a lot of makers in the area too. There's David Lish is in the area. There's a lot of great makers down in California and Colorado and in Arizona. It just depends. I don't really have anybody dialed in, but I think my number one would probably be Steve Schwarzer.
How long is the process? Yeah. What?
Like the actual testing process, the physical testing. It's like maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe half an hour at the most.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So you got to chop through a 2x4 twice. Then you have to cut, or and usually you actually do the rope cutting first. So you cut a small section of rope, and then you chop through a 2x4 twice. Then you still has to have an, enough of an edge to shave hair.
Disgusting.
Well, this isn't a chef's knife, so it doesn't matter.
Well, it's still disgusting. You should think about the, you know, do like a little pube situation. Can you imagine? Hey, you Steve, you ready to do my
go to a salon?
He's down there. Good old Steve Schwarzer standing there. All right, Mareko, chop that rope. Okay, chop the wood twice. Okay, now shave. What are you doing? He pulled his pants down, shaving his ding dong. The hell's going on here?
That would be funny. Yeah, I mean, the purpose, I think a lot of people don't understand that, like, that hair is actually a shockingly tough material to cut, especially fine hair.
Especially down there. Yeah,
speak
yeah.
for yourself.
No, especially finer hair, so.
I bet. Yeah. I believe you.
So pubic hair actually is easier to shave, because arm hair is going to be harder. Anyways, yeah, so, and then you have to do the 90-degree bend, and then as long as it...
Why are you laughing?
I don't know. It's hard enough.
You gotta shove it in a vise and bend it 90 degrees, and then
stretch it out. You gotta stretch it out.
Stretch it out. And the blade, actually, a lot of people aren't aware of this. The blade is actually allowed to crack partially, but no more than I think 1/3 of the total width at which it is being bent. So if the blade's 1.5 inches wide, it can't crack more than 1/2 inch. Otherwise, it fails. But then at the same time, depending on who you're testing with, like the rules, unfortunately, can be a little, there's a little bit of flexibility for the judge and the judge's judgment, and say it, like some judges might say there it can't crack at all, even though the rules say that it's allowed to. It's not allowed to completely break. Or a half, like cracking more than a third, it would be considered a failure of the toughness of the blade.
Now the funnier part would be the cracking. You know, like the question of if the judge's preference in regards to cracking would be, it's, you know, it's whatever. The funny part would be which judge decides what hair to shave.
Like, yeah.
Well, you know, your hair is very fine. And, we need to go with, you know, we've got to come over to get to shave the dog over here or something like that. And that's how I do it. And when I test people, you got to do the armpits plus the back of a dog. You know, I don't.
A dog's haunches. Cool. I would be careful testing with Jason Knight then. I feel like he's got that kind of a sense of humor. He would make you do something like that.
One thing I notice is a lot of these guys make you go past 90 degrees. Like a lot. Farther. I've seen a few where they're just like, I talked to Matt Stagmer and he was just like, yeah, they made me go way past 90 degrees.
Yeah, some of them, it's hard to read. And honestly, there should be a secondary guide or like a right angle indicator right next to where the knife is being bent. But yeah, a lot of it is because while the handle looks like it's parallel to the ground, it's really important that the portion of the blade where the blade is actually bending is actually at 90 degree. So that means that the handle can actually be far below 90 degree before that portion of the blade is actually at 90 degrees. Yeah.
Would you put a handle on your testing knife?
Yeah, it needs to have. I mean, I guess technically it doesn't have to have a handle, but I would definitely do a handle.
Seems like that's where, if you were bending the knife, that's where people have a hard time because, you know, as the knife is flexing, might, you know, pop the scales off.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the scales come off at that point. At that point of the test, it's all about the blade at which point it is being bent. Hmm. The rest of it, like the handle could fail, something else could happen, and like it doesn't fucking matter. Or the blade can't break somewhere else on the knife, but the handle scales could come off. That doesn't matter.
Hmm. It's all about the steel.
It's about the steel. Yeah.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
There you go. Look at you.
That's the answer. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know what? At this stage in the game, I think we should head over to the listener feedback because we have a lot to catch up on.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it. Before we do, I want to tell everybody all about Texas Farrier Supply, texasfarriersupply.com, where you can go and get everything you need as a knife maker, bladesmith, whatever you want to call yourself, even a farrier. They've got you covered. TexasFireSupply.com. They've got handle materials. They've got steel. They've got tools. And you get 10% off by using KnifeTalk10 at checkout. So head on over to TexasFireSupply.com.
So we get great listener feedback and audio messages. All you have to do is follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And when you DM us, there's an opportunity for you to record a message like our friend Evan Davis has. And here's what Evan Davis has to say.
Hey, Knife Talk. This is Evan at Enceladus Cutlery with my feedback on those sanding machines. I hate to repeat it, but experience is underrated. My hand sanding has sped up the most from getting reps in.
Just real quick, we were talking last week and somebody was asking in regards to, you know, those hand sanding machines that people are making.
Yeah, sure.
The different types of hand sanding machines. There's the type that moves back and forth like Dennis Terrell's done. Then there's also the Kyle Daly makes a fixture that goes into holds a mold polishing stone. We were just talking about that. So
for like on a Sawzall or something?
Right.
Yeah.
And on the grinder and from... It has sped up the most from getting reps in on the grind.
Wait, sorry.
Experience is underrated. My hands...
Let me just start over.
To repeat it, but experience is underrated. My hand sanding has sped up the most from getting reps in on the grinder and from taking classes. Those sanding machines are really great, and they do have a place, but you got to start with clean grinds. I love the show. Keep it up, guys. Thanks.
I tell you, now that I'm by myself and I have to do everything, I've gotten my hand sanding down so much faster, and a lot of it's because I'm spending so much more time on the disc sander. Go to the grinder and then the disc sander, and I don't think I'm spending more than, I'm spending probably 25 minutes a knife on hand sanding. It's great, and it's great, and it's a great finish. Really happy with the finish, and I'm not using mold polishing stones anymore. I think I'm really focusing on spending a lot of time on the disc sander, and then I'm hand sanding with paper, and I'm getting great results.
So it's all about the prep before you get to the
all
point
about
of
the prep.
Sanding.
If you got a ding or you got a something, you got to dig something out. You're spending too much time by hand. Like you got to. That's the key. That's the name of the game. It's how do you get down those valleys as efficiently as possible, and just digging them out for 4 hours. Something's wrong.
Sure.
Something's wrong.
Well,
and I'd say a lot of that's going to be grinder technique before you get to that point of sort of finishing as well. Do you know what I mean? If you've got a nice, smooth, with no issues at all, by the time it comes to finishing and hand sanding and all the rest of it, it should be plain sailing.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to add that, you know, a lot of people are doing compound grinds, S grinds, convexes, and stuff like that, all kinds of crazy grinds. And I will say, unfortunately, the disc sander is not very useful on those. But like Craig was saying and like Evan's saying, the better you can be coming off the machine and also the higher the grit you can take it to on the machine before going to the hand sanding, it's going to make things so much easier
for
you.
Well, that's what I was saying,
too. That's a long
saying. That's what I was saying, too.
Well, sorry, you as well, but you're also talking about the disc. And
but it doesn't matter. The disc or the grinder, if you spend enough time grinding it right, that's the most important. It's the prep before you hand sand.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to cut you out of that, Jeff.
It's fine. I don't care.
You got a little defensive there.
Fine by me. I'm just stretching it out. Don't worry. Don't worry about me.
You get the rubber stretching back there. I also want to say Evan is a fucking mensch. Yeah, so Craig has one of those, the power caps, right? I believe the respirator. Evan, I was talking about the respirator situation. Evan hooked me up. That guy, I fucking owe him. So he's got a little something coming his way soon. I appreciate it, Evan. Mad props to you. And also, congratulations again for being Pear's pick from the Damascus Steel Knife Chef's Knife Invitational.
Yeah. Look at the winner takes it all. Yes.
Hell yeah.
Winner takes it all. Unbelievable. By the way, did you put the thing in the last week?
No. And I said I would.
Yeah.
But I went to go and grab it, but the link had expired of the audio. And I was like, oh, fuck. And then I didn't want to get back to Carly and apologize and all the rest of it. So no, I didn't. But it was fun if you missed it.
Okay, we have our man Jaco. Jaco is Jaco van de Bruinhorst. Sorry, Jaco, you're my guy.
Sorry.
Sorry. Well, do you know how to say it? You guys know how to say it? It used to be JVC Custom Knives or JVC Knives. Jaco's our guy.
Okay.
And he has a KTP GPT for the podcast. He says, this fella, he says, so the guy sends him a message and he says, this fella, he says he's about to buy one of my knives that's available on the secondary market. And after looking me up, he says this, and this is, he gave me a screenshot and he goes, hey, you're not a bladesmith because you don't forge your own blades. Forging your fake layers together doesn't make you a bladesmith. If you want a real challenge, I can send you some old leaf springs. And you'll know how hard people have it who are bladesmiths. Let me know. And then Jaco wrote, although I don't usually forge blades to shape, I do forge together all my patterns and my knives. What would you rather call me? This was the mistake number one. And then this dickhead responds, knife makers and forgers. It's so dumb when you try to give yourself a title that are undeserved. And then Jaco wrote, a knife maker and a forger equals bladesmith. So then he said, I have no affiliation with selling knives. This is Jaco's saying to us. I have no affiliation with selling knives. I made for other people. However, I do want to keep good status with past and current customers and help where I can. Please advise. Mm. So this dude is worried that, Jaco's worried that he's going to get a bad reputation from this douchebag. Bag of douches.
This is like secondary customer service.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you've done that bit, you've sold the knife.
Well, this guy didn't even buy a knife.
Well, somebody did, and now it's trying to be resold. That's what I'm saying. So this new guy now isn't Jaco's customer, is he?
No, he's just like some, peon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
here's the GP. Here's the KTP GPT is where we get one of these scenarios, and we have to explain, or we have to kind of interpret in what we should do. The first mistake was responding to this guy in the DMs. Number one, he's coming at you with energy that you don't need. You've got to deal with people in emails, not in DMs. Fucking scattershot, shoot from the hip bullshit that people do who think you have the time and the energy to feel their insanity is too much for you. And for you, Jaco, and you're my guy, I met you at Blade Show, you do not have the time to deal with this kind of energy. Racco, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like there's a saying I've been hearing a lot and it's what other people think is none of your business. I think I've actually heard you say that before, Jeff.
Me?
I think.
I'm not that clever.
Here's the deal. Like, I'm looking at Jaco's work. It's very good.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, his work
He ain't no bladesmith.
His work is very good. There are plenty of bladesmiths who do not forge blades anymore, either because of tooling or physical limitations, but they are still... And you also don't need to forge every fucking blade to be considered a bladesmith. The ability to forge your steel, the knowledge and understanding, and the ability to forge a blade, great, you're a bladesmith. Does that mean you have to forge every fucking knife? No, it does fucking not. And so this guy can shove it, whoever this dude is. What he's saying it doesn't matter. Now, I will say, I think technically, if you are a stock removing knife maker, you're a knife maker. Bladesmiths do forge blades, but again, they don't have to forge them all the time because it's literally the definition of being a bladesmith. But at the same time, you don't need to be forging your blades all. I don't forge all my blades. I've done plenty of stock removal. Jeff is predominantly stock removal, but he's also a bladesmith because he's forging blades. He's making integrals. He's doing full brew the forge. Great. That doesn't mean, but I think people get caught up with that idea that because you do it once or you have the ability to do it, you should be doing it all the time because otherwise the knife isn't as quality or isn't of as much value as it otherwise ought to be. And that's not necessarily the end all be all defining feature for what brings quality or value to a particular piece. So
yeah,
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I think something like Dharma Steel is a great example of that, really, isn't it? Because, sure. I mean, we've been fortunate enough to see some amazing stuff recently made with Dharma Steel. And I think if you tried to forge billets of stainless with those type of patterns, it's not feasible to make anything then that, you know, that you could sell, because the price would just be ridiculous, the amount of work that goes into it. But we've seen the stuff that people are making with Dharma Steel, and it's high-end stuff. Yeah, I think that guy is just a dick.
Here's the best part. If you read into what the first thing the guy says is, hey, you're not a bladesmith because you don't forge your own blades. Forging your fake layers together doesn't make you a bladesmith.
Fake layers.
If you want a real challenge, I can send you some leaf springs. This motherfucker doesn't know what he's talking about at all. I mean, this legitimately, it's like all of a sudden he's, you know, if you really want to KTP GPT this thing, who the fuck is this guy? This guy sounds like he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
He's a fucking armchair expert.
I'll send you some leaf springs. What kind of fucking idiot would say something like that? I mean, that's just like what all of a sudden I'm waiting for this dickhead to send me a fucking box full of leaf springs. And then what? And then what? I got a video. You got a Zoom call? Watch me forge your fucking stupid ass leaf springs. What an asshole. This is like, this is, here's the problem. Now I'm mad at you, Yako. Your time is far more valuable than sending this dude anything. You leave the motherfucker unread. You meet the motherfucker unread. You don't ask him, you know, what would you rather call me? Don't invite him in for a cup of coffee, all right? This is a guy you leave on the fucking street, and you put your eyes down and walk past him, right?
This is
not the guy you invite in a home, because you know what's going to happen, and that's what happened. Guy's an asshole. You have better time. You have more work to do. You got a pile of kids, too. You don't have time to deal with these fucking assholes who are planning on sending. You should just tell them to send you their leaf springs. Go ahead. Send me some leaf springs. Send me more material, and then do nothing. So take his fucking leaf springs. Yes. Well,
this guy sounds like the kind of guy. He would say, Giacco would say, yeah, sure, send me the leaf springs, and then that guy would charge Giacco to pay for the shipping.
No, you said you're going to send me leaf springs. You didn't say I have to pay you to pay for them. Giacco, tell this fat fuck to send you some leaf springs. Tell him to send you, yes, send me leaf springs. Yes, I want your leaf springs. I want 10 of them. 10 leaf springs. Yeah. And you're paying for them. Fuck this guy. It drives me crazy. Yeah. Don't waste it your time bad, with these it? Guys, Yako. All right. We have a nice message from Keenan Zimmerman, who was he's going to be surprised. His beef is that we didn't read his questions. So get ready when the all beef review comes. Keenan. We're doing them all except for one. One of your questions was not worth. I mean, there's a reason why we didn't. I didn't put it in. It was something about like, how do you feel about barefoot shoes? Get the fuck out of here. Don't worry about that. So, Kian Zimmerman, we were with you, our guy. You're our guy. Kian Zimmerman says, "I hope there's a bar of gold in that safe for our man Craig." Craig,
I hope so too.
Craig,
yes.
You gonna break it to him?
Fuck all in there. It was just literally dirty water in there. It was disgusting.
Do you think that it was groundwater? Do you think they were just like, I have a great idea. Before we leave, we better just take a leak. Took a big shit in there? Is that what they did? You have 30-year-old feces in there?
I guess we know what Craig's doing when he leaves that house.
You know what the funny part is, Miracle? He says he got a pump, but you know he just put a hose in there and started sucking on it and bringing it out. They sent you the big one. This fucking Upper Decker in your safe. Do you know what an Upper Decker is?
No.
Upper Decker. This is so stupid. An Upper Decker is when you go into a bathroom, you take the lid off the toilet, and you take a dump in the lid of the top of the toilet. It's an Upper Decker.
Upper Decker. Right.
Right. I apologize.
We're going to use that in the title somehow. I don't know how.
No, you're not.
But no, we know at some point this house flooded at some point, so I'm pretty sure that's what that water is. It's just been there for a long, long, long time, you know.
Yeah. So you know what to do when you move.
Exactly, the Upper Decker. Yes, yeah.
Can you imagine? And then they do the Facebook story about the safe, and they open it up, and there's this floater on the top. No money at all.
I'm in that room now, so I can actually see it on the floor, and it looks like a French toilet. That's exactly what some toilets are like in France. They're just holes in the floor.
So oh my God.
You put your back up against the wall, and you just squat down.
You're doing a wall squat. Working out while you're shitting at the same time.
And then the next generation thinks it's some sort of treasure. That's the best part.
Yeah.
All right, our man Ben.
It's just sweet corn.
I think we're going to be rich. Nah, it's just an Upper Decker. All right, guys, listen. If you want, here's the message from our man Ben from EDC Gearhouse.
What's up, KTP? I just heard the new episode and heard something that resonated with me that Jeff said, and I just wanted to touch on it. It was about the pulley that Jeff had fixed at a local shop and how they didn't disclose that they fucked something up. Man, that is the worst thing to do when you have to call the customer and say, like, hey, man, it didn't go according to plan, blah, blah, blah. But it's also the best feeling when you make it right and the customer is just as happy, if not happier, because they know that they can trust you to always give them, a proper product back. We do it, and believe me, we've had some fuck-ups, man. But it's really important that you stay honest as a small business, because we're working against everything, and you just need every positive aspect in your corner. So, that's all, man. Thanks, guys.
So what I was, I'm just checking.
He's not a heart surgeon, is he?
What are you talking about?
Because if you fuck up, then well, you're going to ring him and say, "I'm sorry." But
so what I was talking about last week is I had to get my the motor of my table saw repaired, okay. And when I got it, brought it back, I realized that the pulley, which goes on the shaft, and there's a set screw. I saw that the set screw looked like it was a little bit walled out. The area around the set screw was walled out, and when I put up the belt on, started the whole thing on, I heard this ding, and then I saw the pulley fly past my feet, and I realized the guy, they knew, they took the pulley off, they obviously fucked up the threading, and instead of just telling me, they just pretended like nothing happened, and I brought the pulley in, and what happened was the guy who's known me forever, kind of like, he saw me holding a pulley, and he kind of ran out, and then I was irritated at the fact that it was only $15 pulley, but the fact is he didn't go out. He didn't even try to like say, "Hey, look, this pulley, we replaced the pulley," or he's afraid. I don't know what the fuck he was. He just let it go, and then he knew there was something wrong.
Yeah,
and it was just one of those things where it was a real bad situation for a small business to not have any customer service in regards to fixing something. And, if you see something, you should say something, even, regardless of whether it's going to be bad news for your customer or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Marco?
I think maintaining trust is the hardest part for a customer base, especially because, like, they're trading their money, which is earned through time on whatever task or job they have. And it's hard to get that, earn those ducats these days. And so I think it's about trust and respect. And if you're not willing to try to develop that trust and hopefully gain, whether it's a long-term customer with that person directly or anybody they might refer to you in the future, then you're not going to have, you're not showing them the respect I think they deserve, just as a normal human being, just trying to get through life. And you prove yourself to be kind of shady and not trustworthy and unwilling to take care of your customer properly. And I had a customer, I don't really do this anymore, especially after this situation, but a customer sent me a piece of, 5A grade koa, like exhibition koa. It was like a $200, $300 block of wood. I fucked it up. It was a one-of-a-kind piece, completely lost. and I had to make it right. It was rough. It did not feel good, but it took time to find some handle material that was going to suit them. And I basically was like, find a piece, I'll buy it. It actually didn't even matter to me if it cost more or less or whatever than the piece they had originally sent me. I was wanting to make that right. And we found a piece, we moved forward with the project, and it turned out great. And they were happy, man. But man, it's a kick to the stomach for sure to have that experience. But I agree with Ben. Like, it's on us to take care of people, to make it right. Because again, like, especially a small business owners, we really rely on that grassroots, you know, word of mouth and reputation. And I think it's important that we preserve that and create that as best as we can for ourselves. Because those references or suggestions or sending people your way is what's really going to help you long term as a business.
I was thinking about it this week because a few other things came up, and I thought about the idea of, like, you know, when you get older, you have to build credit to a certain degree. And part of it is, you know, being able to have, you know, you get a credit check, and then they know if you've paid your bills on time or you have a credit rating. And part of that is you have to, you know, you have to build on your credit rating. And I think the same thing is the same thing with your business. You want people to know that they can count on you. And you just, in your situation with the COA, I mean, that's an extreme case. It's just not something that happens very often. I mean, my situation, this guy was like, you know, I said to Craig last week, I spent a few thousand dollars over the years having tools repaired by this guy. And over a $15 pulley, $15, it wouldn't have been the cost, $15 wouldn't even have been the cost. He could have extended himself a little bit of, you know, good, you know, customer service towards me, who is a long-term customer, as opposed to nickel and diming me and then hoping that I'm not going to notice. So I noticed within the first cut, fucking thing just flew out. It just flew out. Mm-hmm. And then when I tried to put the set screw back in, the threads were destroyed. You know, it was a very, very, like, it wasn't a matter of time. It was just, like, immediate.
Yeah.
And you've got to, I think that one of the things I do hate, and we talk about this a lot, is there is this adversarial relationship with customers that I think that a lot of knife makers have. And we make jokes. I make a lot of jokes about customers and stuff like that. And I'm also trying to be mildly entertaining. And the problem is for the longevity, it's always about the long game. You can't do things that are going to jeopardize your business over a long period of time. And part of that's, I've said this story a million times. A friend of mine bought a knife from another friend of mine. The knife showed up. It had rust on it. The guy who bought it sent a message to my friend and said, hey, you know, I got the knife. It's beautiful, but there's this rusty spot on it. And my friend's response was, it wasn't like that when I sent it. Mm. And the guy was like, it's not a big deal, but I'd never buy another thing from him again, but I wouldn't even recommend him.
Yeah.
And that shit goes like wildfire. I know tons of knife makers who have these high opinion of themselves, and then I know, and then I hear, like, you know, the guy doesn't answer his emails, or this guy doesn't do that, or you know, this shit follows you, and you can't get involved with. You have to do the right thing, and that COA story, it must have been really tough, but you did the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you saw something very similar in the end?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, I mean, like I said, I just told them, find a piece that you like, I'll buy it, and I'll get back on it. And
yeah,
that was it. At that point, I was just like, I don't fucking care what it costs. I mean, if it was like $500 or $1,000 for a piece of code, that's something else. But if it was similar, and I wanted them to feel good about the handle material, because I'm sure, like, it sounds like what Jeff's motor guy would have done would just slap on a different handle block and be like, it's the same block. It just changes when you sculpt into the handle material. It's all right. Where I wanted them that, you know, this, that handle material, something that they had sourced and they had been sitting on for many years, waiting for a special project to put it on.
So what happened?
And then I fucked it up. So I did the hidden tang, and when I was sculpting the handle, I didn't realize that the slot for the hidden tang had actually kind of gotten close to the perimeter of the handle, and I ground right through into the pocket for the hidden tang. So I've ever since then, I've been very, very careful to know exactly where that is. But yeah, that's what happened. And so I had to get a new block of handle material. Yeah, it was a drag.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Well, you know where you can get some handle material, don't you?
Sure do.
Oh, man, at maritimeknifesupply.com. He's got everything you need. The one-stop shop for knife makers with steel, belts, those handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is a good dude, and you can also follow him on Instagram at maritimeknifesupply. Always got good stuff in stock. Go take a look.
And he's got some spicy beef for the all-beef review. So
oh, really?
Get ready for that. Spicy beef.
You got to wait for the all beef review, ladies and gentlemen. That's our last show of the year or the first show of the year. I don't remember.
Mm.
But we need you to send in your beef. What gets you? Carly sent in some mildly spicy beef. But people are sending in their beef. What?
You're supposed to play it up.
I am playing it up. Lawrence sent in some spicy ass beef. You got to get ready for it. Carly sent some beef that's spicy to me, but it might not be spicy to other people.
Okay.
But
personal beef.
I mean, you're going to have to wait, I guess. yeah. Dom Rav Design sent us in a dilemma a couple weeks ago. And the dilemma was that he was doing a sample, and then something happened, and then somebody slept through the cracks, and he didn't know what to do. Do you remember that one?
I think so.
So he was supposed to do some samples for a person. Life happens. He slipped through the cracks. He didn't give them the sample, and then he's like, should I reach out again, or should I just forget about it? And we said, just send him a message. So Dom says, hey, guys. I can't thank you enough for the advice on my KTP GPT. The customer was cool with everything. I sent the sample, and a few weeks later, I sent a full order. He's happy. I'm happy. It's all good. Thank you. See, guys, when you listen to Knife Talk and you interact with us,
hell yeah,
we make you money, okay? We make you money. When you listen to us, we will make you money.
And how much does it cost to listen to us?
Zero.
Exactly. Exactly.
You just gotta you gotta participate. But if you want to make money, participate. We'll make you money. You listen to us.
Yeah.
What is the legal disclaimer? The legal disclaimer at the end is like, all things are not the same, but we never know. Who knows what the hell?
Just say it too fast, and they can understand.
Don't worry about that, Upper Decker.
We should have a disclaimer at the end of every show. I'll record one, like really sped up.
views from Knife Talk don't necessarily mean anything. I don't know. Wouldn't even know what to do. We have a little bit more, but whatever you guys want to do.
I was just gonna say, did you guys know? At least, at last I understood, and in as far as I know, at least in the United States, that those spoken disclaimers have to actually be recorded live. They can't be sped up with any technology.
Really?
So the people that are saying them are reading them that fast.
But I think what they do is they cut the spaces out in between the words. Like in the recordings, cut the spacing out.
So the rhythm is all,
So
makes
it one run-on word, you know? we also have this is an old one from BW Knot.
Wait, before we go ahead. I got a couple of questions for the two of you.
Let's do the questions. Go ahead.
Okay, Mareko, if I were looking to buy a grinder, what would I buy? And Jeff, how would I sharpen my knife when I'm done?
That's easy.
Well, you got to grind your knife on a Broadback grinder. Those Broadback grinders, those guys, Ryan, our man, Mr. Broadback himself. He's there making, he came up with the design long time ago. He's making grinders, for knife makers, as a knife maker. He's doing great stuff. He's a great dude. I love seeing him and spending time with him, whether it's at Maker Camp, Blade Show, wherever he's at. They're doing a lot of great stuff. I can't remember what deals they have going on right now. I'm sorry. I don't know if Ben has posted. Is it just the Knife Talk 10 still right now?
Well, if it Cyber Monday's over and Black Friday's over, that means that if you go to BroadbackIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off.
Yeah. They have great tool arms. They got a great chassis, everything. They got tons of different tool arms for their machines. And they work cross-platform. So maybe you don't need a chassis, but you need some different tool arms. Go check them out. And then at Broadback Ironworks, make sure you use KNIFETALK10 when you check out and save yourself 10% and support our friends over at Broadback Ironworks.
Craig's all about stretching out the tool arm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. getting the right angle. Yeah.
I just spent the day sharpening a ton of knives on the Tormek. I love the Tormek. I love the different jigs they have. I'm particularly fond of, they sent me the new truing tool. I love using the truing tool to truing the stones. It's so, I mean, it's like, it's super duper ASMR, and you're making sure that you don't have an egg. That's if you don't true your wheel, you end up with an egg. Gotta get rid of the egg. I love the Tormek. It's made me a better knife maker. I make sharp knives, and I'm just like, I couldn't be more happy with it. So go to Tormek.com or follow them, Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. And if you have questions, feel free to send them a message. They have awesome customer service, and they're made in Sweden. They have them in the United States, and they're really great piece of equipment.
Yeah. Tormek, T-O-R-M-E-K.
Tor stands for, Torgny. That was the original owner. The original creator was a guy by the name of Torgny. And the mech Torgny. is mechanical. So he created this machine because his father made him schlep this giant two-person stone wheel to sharpen his axes, and Torgny was just like, there's got to be an easier way, and he made a small wheel and he put it on his drill press, on his drill, and then they have an amazing museum over there in Sweden with all the different models, from the beginning to the end. It's really kind of a neat story.
Oh, that'd be cool to see.
Yeah, it was amazing because, you know, you think that you don't put the stone on the drill. He used the drill to basically drive a belt that turned the wheel slow because they had to bring the speed down. And the whole story is interesting, and it's a great family run organization. And I don't think the family's involved anymore, but they're involved. I love that. I love those guys, and I'm gonna do some more stuff with them. They came and filmed a documentary here at the shop. That was fun. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was that? Was that about you, or was it about you, like a part in it?
Friends of Tormek. They did one for Florentine Kitchen Knives a number of years ago, and then I've become very friendly with those guys. And they sent Carl Friends, who I've had on the pod on Full Blast a few times. He came down. We had a great time. He's this really fun guy. And the coolest part was he brought one of these drones, you know, these drones for filming. He had to get a pilot's license. He had to go to, like, take FAA classes.
Yeah, you got to be licensed.
These drones, and I know I sound like an old guy, they are amazing. Like, he had it go so high up in the air, and you could watch the screen from the thing, and I was just like, I was getting nervous. It felt like a balloon had flown off, and you know, it's like, what if it gets stuck in a tree? And it was intense, super intense. So he was doing all sorts of filming with the drone. It was great. And it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Cool.
I want to get one of those. Cool.
Are you just to fly it around?
First, just for like fight for slight sightseeing.
You pervert.
I'm not flying it to Wales.
Yeah. You're flying to somebody's window, you know, looking for Upper Deckers, searching for Upper Deckers.
There's a lot of beautiful stuff to see here in the Pacific Northwest. You get up on top of these hikes, but you have a very limited view. So my thought is, like, once you get up there, enjoy the view, but then bust out the drone. I want one with the headsets, so then you fly it around, and then you kind of essentially start flying from that point, because now your point of view is the drone, and it's an eagle eye view, and now you're seeing everything else that you cannot see from just being on the ground.
Yeah, as you walk off the cliff.
You gotta sit down. Do not stand up.
It was pretty amazing.
Bring a fucking chair.
Okay, shall we call it a day? This is a reminder for everybody to get your beefs to us. If you don't know what a beef is, it's when you know something's been grinding your gears, really winding you up. Send those in to us, and we do it every year. We do the All Beef Review, and we have a full show with just reading out people's beefs. You know, a nice positive way to start the year.
Yeah, well, and then the other thing is like, once again, I keep saying don't say names or names of companies. All of a sudden, I'm starting to edit people writing, I hate this company.
Unless it's Dremel, we don't want to.
We're not going to be besmirching any companies or people. So, but we're just about halfway there, which is good. I mean, usually, you know, I need some more though. I need some good ones though. You know, ones that spark conversation. YouTube guys, we're not going to just read them and then just ramp. We're going to have to try to have a conversation.
We had some good conversation last time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I have TV reviews. I have TV suggestions for you guys.
Oh, afterwards? Okay.
For the after show.
Oh.
Big time. I got a question for you guys afterwards.
Well, let's go. Let's get the...
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Before we do that, something we haven't done for a while.
Oh.
So, the machine is back, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But busy time of the year now. We're coming up to it. So we've all got, you know, we've got a list of things we need to get through, I bet. What's the dream for the week, Mareko?
Yeah, so I like to try to call my year done before Thanksgiving, just because once Thanksgiving hits, it's just there's so much shit going on between the holidays and family. And it's kind of too much for me. So I, like I said, I have these knives in the shop. I'm just working on giving them spa days, making them pretty. So that's kind of what I got coming up for me. So just making knives look good. And sending them back out and on their way and back into their homes to make their owners happy. That's what I'm looking
nice.
For.
And Jeffrey, what have you got?
My birthday's on Saturday, and my wife's taking me out for a few things. We're gonna get. I think I'm getting tattooed for some reason, but you know.
Matching tattoos.
No. I got my guy's gonna do a little work for me. So we're gonna that. What else? My daughter's coming back at the end of next week, which I'm so happy for. Can't wait. I did this week's episode of Full Blast. I tried something new and I made a phone call. So I called her. So she's on. Oh. I did a call. I'm going to start to do that more often. It actually worked great.
That's great.
It was really good. And she's coming home. That's terrific. And we're going to a show. My sister who passed away, my sister's partner had a shop, art show, in a posthumous art show. So we're going to go to that. And I'm really looking forward to that. And then, you know, I like cranking through the Christmas years. I fucking work me to the, you know, the end. Well, I'm ready.
Yeah. Nice.
What about you?
Cool. There we go. Getting through kids start a new school on Monday. So getting through those first few days because, you know, everything's new to them, you know. So, yeah, that'll be interesting, especially Buddy, the little one. But what's mad is, so they start school a lot later here in the UK than they do in France. In France, basically, fetuses are going to school, you know, super, super young. So, like, he's been in school already for 2 years. And now he starts school now with kids in a nursery who are literally just starting. So he's like 2 years ahead. You know, he's got 2 years more experience of school than they have. And the same with the girls. The girls have been in school for 5 years and they go into year two.
Right.
You know, so they should be flying. They should be flying. They're looking forward to it anyway. So that's the main thing.
I really hope they show up to school with French accents.
Yeah.
How great would that be?
Yeah. But they're excited because they keep saying they've got a secret language over here because they're obviously fluent, the girls. So they speak French to each other a lot. And they're going to be those weird kids, I'm sure. But they've got their own little language so they can get away with all sorts of mischief. So it'll be, yeah. So I've got that and I've got this big 20-hour trip to do as well. So that's happening this week. That'll be cool.
Very nice.
That's the week. The week to come. Okay, let's call it a day then, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, wait there a second. We've got a bit of a... There we go, after show now. We just, you know, we need to do it formally.
Yeah.
So TV recommendations, what we got?
I have a friend of ours. I don't know if you met him, Amoreco. You might have met him last year at Maker Camp. His name's Dan Joyce. He's a Philly guy. I think he's made some knives before. He's a maker. He's in the film biz, and I don't know if he does the camera thing. I don't know if he's a key grip. I don't know if he's a lighting guy. I think he's somewhere in there. And he worked on this show on HBO called Task.
Okay.
It's fantastic. It's this real Philadelphia, Mark Ruffalo is an FBI agent, and he's got all sorts of problems, and there's like this motorcycle gang involved, and there's robberies, and it's outstanding. We finished it yesterday, and I even sent a message to Dan. I said, whatever you did on that show, you did a great job. And it was amazing. Task was really good. And then there was an Apple show with Emma Thompson.
I love Emma Thompson.
Something. The name doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. You guys know what I'm talking about? Apple TV. It's like.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like another mystery.
I don't know the show.
It's a mystery show. It's similar to Slow Horses.
Okay.
But it's like a dumb. The name doesn't really make sense to the show. But it's like something alley, something. Back alley, something or other with Emma Thompson. Fantastic, too.
don't Google that.
Back alley with Emma Thompson.
Having a back alley with Emma Thompson. Rude. That's not it. All right. I'll get it in a second.
Jeff, you were talking earlier about needing to find somebody else, somebody to come help work in the shop. How do you go about doing that? Because I'm thinking about trying to maybe find somebody to help with editing video, because I'm realizing that's like, it's just outside of my capabilities or what my knowledge base. I'm sure it's something I can learn, but trying to do that on top of making knives and doing the Patreon and stuff like that is a little bit too much. And so I'm trying to think of how to approach finding somebody.
You're trying to find an assistant?
Not even necessarily assistant. Well, I guess somebody to help with putting videos together because, it's kind of too much for me trying to do the video on top of doing all the other stuff and life in general on top of that.
Okay.
And so I'm curious how you go about finding somebody and maybe it might help inspire me.
Number one is the show is called Down Cemetery Road with Emma Thompson on Apple TV. Fantastic. Okay. She's outstanding. Okay. Here's the problem is we have this expectation that the first person you get is going to be great. And usually you have to really work through problems. Like I've had great employees. I've had mediocre employees. It's always a learning experience based on the person who's at the shop at the time, what I'm looking for, what I'm not looking for. So you can't really, you have to set your expectations low and your acceptance high. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I would do is, because I actually, my last guy came from, he was listening to this podcast. I was saying, I'm looking for somebody. And then what I do is I make them send an email and then have them send a resume because that will just file out.
It requires effort.
It requires effort. Sure. Don't just somebody like that, just sending a DM saying, fucking do it.
I'll do it. Sure.
unless you know the person. If they don't have the wherewithal to do what you tell them to do, and so send me an email with your resume and your experience, then I ain't interested. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to talk to them, and it might work, and it might not work. And you also have to realize you're never going to find the perfect person right off the bat, and you have to say, is this person going to work with what I need them to do? Mm-hmm. And then you make the decision. But I've had interns that have been great. I've had interns that were terrible. I've had employees that were great. I've had employees that are terrible. I've had in between. And you just have to understand that you, as the leader, have to figure out what you're looking for. And then you're looking for someone who is on time, capable, and really relatively innocuous to your life. You know, and
I don't know how you mean that.
Well, you don't want them to be repellent to you.
I see.
Want to be able to be in the same room with them, especially if you're playing.
You'd want them to bring drama.
And then you have to set expectations. And I'll say something that a lot of people aren't going to like. You shouldn't try to be friends with the person that you're hiring, because all of a sudden when these weird little gray areas happen and you just keep it business and don't, you know, yeah, and just try not to, you know, like, oh, well, you know, he's this and you making excuses for a person. It either work or it doesn't work.
I got you.
You know, the most important thing is, can they, you know, go on your Instagram stories and say, I'm looking for someone in this area to do this, this, and this, and send me an email. And if you send me a DM, you're fired.
You're preemptively fired.
Yeah. You don't get it.
You're fired.
Like, it's like if they can't send you an email with some type of resume,
yeah,
you're fired.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I don't even do that. Allison does that for me. I don't do that shit. She'll sort through them, and then we'll decide if we're going to use them or not.
You struck gold with Allison.
Oh, you're not kidding. Allison's fantastic. Yeah, we're getting ready for our Christmas party. The Fader and I's Christmas party is going to be in January, and it's going to be just the three of us, and I couldn't be happier. It's going to be me, and yeah, my wife might show up, but we're going to go down to Chinatown, Tony and me and Allison. We're going to celebrate a great 2025 and very excited for 2026.
What do you guys nice. Do? Do you guys go crush some dumps?
Hey, yo.
Sorry.
Some shumai. Get some shumai. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. We usually go
crush some dumps.
Don't write. That's not the title. That's not the title.
Oh, that's a good title.
No, we're not crushing dumps is the title.
That's or slamming D. Okay,
no,
okay. We don't have it. We got Upper Decker as a title so far, and I'm not sure that's a good.
No, none of them are good titles. You always give us these titles that will never get new sponsors. It's always just like, you know, just let them think that, you know, let them, you know. We usually go to Chinatown. There's a place we like called Nam Wa, and it's a great little kind of dim sum place in Chinatown we go to every year. We didn't go last year just because Tony was so busy. We just kind of ended up not going. But yeah, this year we're going to go and we'll have some, you know, Chinese food and good stuff. Fun.
Nice.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Can't get much better than that.
Should we call it a day?
Yeah. I'm with you.
Should we call it a day?
I'm with you.
Yes. Right. Thank you all for listening. And we shall speak to you again next week. Get your Christmas shopping done. We haven't got long left. Bye for now.